T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Now it's time for Filani and Reamer on Boston Sports Station, WEEI.
That's right, the intro never lies. Chris Filani is supposed to join me, but he's going to be coming in at 10. Need to sleep in today, I guess. Oh, a little sweepy, sweepy. Sleep is for the weak. Do you know what? I'll sleep when I'm dead. Yeah, that's what I have to say. It's Reamer on a Sunday morning. Going to be a new tradition around these parts very soon. Warning you, church and me. And two things that go together hand in hand. They really go together well. But we're here till noon today at 617-779-7937. Your phone number again is 617-779-7937. We do have much to get into. As I mentioned in trending, Robert Kraft did break his month-long silence yesterday, releasing a statement of apology, saying he is truly sorry, without quite articulating exactly what he's truly sorry for. He also made a point to mention in the first paragraph of his apology that there has been a lot of misinformation surrounding this matter. Misinformation, fake news. Kraft's attorney, one of his attorneys, William A. Burke, released a pretty scathing statement Friday night talking about a law enforcement illegally obtained videotape in the Kraft case and the traffic stop as well that they conducted after his first visit to identify him. He said the traffic stop was illegal as well. Kraft was the passenger of the Bentley, of course, and they asked for his identification, not just the driver's. So lots of Kraft news that I'm sure will dominate the early portion of this week as the NFL owners' meetings get underway. We'll do that with Filani when he comes in at 10, because a little known fact about Chris Filani, in addition to being a fill-in extraordinaire here on WEEI, Red Sox broadcasts, in addition to that, he's a man of the law. He's a writer for Law 360, a very, very elite legal wire service, if you will. Law firms pay tens of thousands of dollars a year to subscribe to Chris Filani's legal musings, legal analysis, legal write-ups. So I think we have a perfect man to break down all the latest in this coming up at 10. But I want to start off here this morning reacting to what happened with the Celtics last night. We had the Bruins beat the Panthers 7-3 in Florida, clinch a playoff berth, all the big guys score. It's a great win for the Bees. Looks like they're poised for a long playoff run. Ken Laird and Matt Kalman had you covered from 8 to 9 here on EEI. But then, just several thousand miles north, I guess, from South Florida to Charlotte, North Carolina, it would be more than hundreds, right? Several hundred. It would be several hundred miles north. But as we may get to later on, my math, really terrible, really terrible. I had a flub on Friday's Mutton Callahan I may want to address before we sign off today as well. But we'll go several hundred miles north in Charlotte. Celtics laid a big egg. They laid a big egg against the Hornets, as I mentioned, losing 124-117, a 30-5 run in the fourth quarter. And I am here to declare the playoffs don't start for another couple weeks. There are, 9 regular season games left. But I am here to declare on March 24th that the Celtics are toast. They are done. This team is going nowhere. This team is not going to go on any sort of playoff run. And last night cemented it for me. And this has not been my take for the bulk of the season. There's been lots of ebbs and flows, ups and downs, petulant Kyrie Irving, Al Horford in and out of the lineup, Gordon Hayward has stunk, Tatum's been inconsistent, Brown started slowly, the young guys have not seemed entirely comfortable with their roles, Brad Stevens has struggled with timeouts and with the lineup. But I've said, on paper, this team, I still take them against Toronto. I'd still give them a fighting chance, a great chance against the Bucks. Don't give me the Greek freak, Kawhi Leonard. Yes, those would be the singular best players in any Celtics-Bucks series or Celtics-Raptors series. But give me the Celtics' depth. When this team is firing on all cylinders or close to firing on all cylinders, they are the best club in the Eastern Conference. But I am no longer a believer in that. I no longer think come the playoffs, this team will be able to flip some switch, which they think they'll be able to do, and ride their way to a deep playoff berth. I just don't see that happening. I mean, last night is the latest in a long string of absolutely brutal, brutal losses for the Celtics team. We know about the 28-point loss to the Clippers. You blow the 28-point lead to the Clippers last month. You blow the lead to the Lakers before the All-Star break. You blow an 11-point lead to the Sixers just the other night. So even recently, the last 3 to 4 weeks, there have been lots of horrible blown losses for the Celtics. But this one, as I mentioned, may take the cake against just a listless, lifeless Hornets team that's ready to get out and start their springs and summers. Celtics are leading 112-94 with 8:20 remaining. And then they go on to, as I mentioned, allow a 30-5 run. They miss 17 of 19 shots down the stretch. Kemba Walker scores 18 points in the final 7 minutes, 43 seconds. He finishes with 36 points overall. Walker's netted 79 points in 2 games in Charlotte against the Celtics this season. Kyrie Irving, after the game, do we have a Kyrie sound, Bridget? Not very happy. Kyrie Irving was not very happy with Brad Stevens' coaching decisions and the way they decided to defend Kemba Walker after the game. So here's Kyrie once again complaining after the fact.
The way this team has a habit of blowing leads, can you fix that problem by the time the playoffs come around?
We have guys that we're not in the lineup right now, so you know that would also help. So judge us when we have our full lineup. But obviously when we come out and play like this with a bunch of young guys down the stretch figuring things out, you know, things are bound to happen, but it's no excuses.
When Kyrie gets it going like that, how tough is he to stop?
It's one-on-one. I have pride. You know, down the stretch, try to come in and help as much as possible. We should have probably trapped him a little bit more like every other team does in the league. You know, but we didn't. So. Tortures us every time we play him, so it's no surprise.
How much tougher was this effort given the fact that Baines, Hayward, Horford, out, Robert?
It was tough, but other guys got to step up. It is what it is.
Yikes, that is not good. I mean, that Walker cut says it all. We should have probably trapped him a little bit, like every other team does in the league. Like, wow, hey, Brad, every other team can figure out how to defend Kemba Walker. Somehow we can't. We didn't. He tortures us every time. It's no surprise. I mean, that is a real shot at Brad Stevens, and it shows that there's a disconnect there between Stevens and his star player. It shows that Kyrie Irving feels he knows more than the coach. And yeah, I think Brad Stevens, the criticism is fair. He's managed his timeouts poorly this year. Go even Monday night against the Nuggets, that run at the end of the third quarter. Where's the timeout? Philadelphia, you blow an 11-point lead. Things get out of hand after the smart ejection. You let them get out of hand. And then last night, yeah, obviously Kemba Walker was going off with the final 8 minutes or so in the fourth quarter, pulling up threes with a man on him, just unconscious from beyond the arc. And Kyrie's right. I mean, in that case, the Celtics did not switch it up. But for Kyrie to say that after the game and blast Stevens publicly to the press like that just shows that there is a disconnect, a major disconnect between the star player and the coach. And overall, the Celtics team's attitude is just so, so poor. You know, you go back to the Sixers game, you know, Terry Rozier. What does Terry Rozier say? And Rozier, by the way, I mean, last night, can you think of a worse shot to end a game than that? I mean, what was he doing? Dribbling to the paint? Then taking it back out with a step back three. You're Terry Rozier. You're not Kyrie Irving. You're not the Greek freak. You're not Steph Curry. You're Terry Rozier. What are you doing? Drilling it into the paint, take it out for a step back that has no chance of making it. That is a terrible shot. Tatum missed a wide open three late last night as well that would have tied the game. The Celtics, as I mentioned, missed 17 of their last 19 shots. Just awful. And what's also awful, is this team's attitude. Again, the Sixers game after on Wednesday, Rozier says, "I thought the confetti was going to drop tonight. I did. It was a big win, not trying to take anything away from them, but I thought the confetti was dropping tonight." Because, of course, last year, when the Sixers beat the Celtics in a home playoff game, confetti dropped. So Rozier's making fun of that. Ha ha. Marcus Morris says, "It was about time the Sixers beat the Celtics." Okay. Well, they did. They beat them. They beat you guys in your last regular season meeting. Morris then goes on and says, "Well, we won the season series." That is the equivalent of Dan Duquette more days in first place. I mean, that's really what that is. The last meeting between you two, between these two teams. You're the Celtics. You want the 3 seed. 3 seed's better than the 5 seed. Right now, you're four games out of that with nine to go. That's not happening. Jimmy Butler scores 15 in the fourth quarter. Embiid lights you up. They get to the free throw line like 28 more times than you do. And what do you say after that game? You say it's about time they beat us? Really? You say we still won the season series? I am all done with Marcus Morris. All set. Gives you nothing on the defensive end. And he's been laying up bricks on the offensive end since about Thanksgiving. So no thank you to any more Marcus Morris. But, I mean, what kind of attitude is that? That is a cocky attitude for a team that doesn't deserve to have any swag right now whatsoever. It is an overconfident team. And I think they take their lead from Kyrie Irving, who all season long, and especially the last few months, after many of these tough losses, he didn't say it last night, he said he takes responsibility, and then questioned Brad Stevens' coaching. But the last couple months, I feel like after numerous tough losses, blown leads, we listen to Kyrie after the game say, "Oh, this doesn't matter. Just wake me up when the playoffs start. We'll flip the switch when the postseason begins." Just last week, Irving was saying, "I envision myself sitting out some of these last games. I'm not going to put an emphasis on these regular season games with the playoffs coming around." In those words, that cockiness, that apparent laissez-faire attitude, that is coming back to bite the Celtics, because this team at best is going to be the four seed. So let's say the best case scenario, they usurp the Pacers, they're only back a game, they're the four seed, that's home court advantage in the first round against Indiana, who in that case would be the five seed most likely, and then you're on the road the rest of the way. You're probably going to have to go through at Milwaukee in the second round, and if chalk holds, at Toronto in the Eastern Conference Finals if you get past the Bucks. So my friend Big O tells me, in the NBA playoffs, it's all about home court advantage. Why did the Celtics go on such a great playoff run last year? Yeah, Tatum was awesome. Jaylen Brown came into his own. Rozier was great filling in for Irving. Aaron Baines, we had all those fun stories. But above all else, the Celtics won their home playoff games. That's what happened last year. And this year, they are not going to have that luxury. So don't tell me that these losses in January, February, and now March don't matter. They do matter. Seeding. They determine seeding. And the Celtics are now the fourth seed at best, and right now sitting in the fifth seed. What a colossal disappointment of a year. And it hasn't gotten better. They're still blaming each other, or they're still blaming the coaching, or they're still not seeming to care that much about their performance on the court. I mean, Kyrie Irving, just last week, saying, "I'm going to sit out regular season games." Just last week, saying these games don't matter. It's all about the playoffs. Okay, yeah, I agree with you in theory. These games don't matter as much as the games that'll happen 2-3 weeks from now. Yeah, that's true. That's true. But you can't say these games don't matter. Take this kind of attitude. I'm going to rest some games the rest of the way and then give up a 30-5 run in the fourth quarter to a bad Hornets team. You can't do that. And also, you look at the guys not in this lineup. Al Horford out again with some knee soreness. Aaron Baines with a sprained ankle. He'll be out for a while longer. Gordon Hayward sitting out with a concussion right now too. I mean, this team, even from a health standpoint, is not firing on all cylinders heading into the playoffs. I mean, Hayward is the real, I mean, because what has been one of the main holes on the Celtics all year, besides bad defensive efforts down the stretch, offensive lapses like we saw in the fourth quarter last night? I mean, they really have lacked a consistent number two scorer to Kyrie Irving. And we had that stretch on the most recent West Coast trip where you beat the Warriors, Hayward hits the game-winning shot in Sacramento against the Kings, and you say, well, maybe Gordon Hayward is now going to step up and be that consistent number two option behind Irving, but now he's out of the lineup with a concussion issue. Okay, so what's the timetable for Hayward to return and Hayward to feel at full strength? Al Horford has taken a significant step back this year. He struggled to defend Embiid on Wednesday night, something that he's done pretty well in the past, and he missed last night's game with knee soreness, getting up there in age, and so Horford has taken a step back this year. And Baines, it sounds silly that a team with this star-studded of a lineup, that Aaron Baines' absence could make any sort of discernible difference. But I think you saw it last night. It would have been nice to have Baines down the stretch on defense last night with the Hornets going on a 30-5 run. And the Celtics are without a key role player as they head into the postseason as well. So it's not looking great. It's not looking great. I mean, again, on paper, if you still line up the Celtics roster, I take them against any other team in the East, but there are so many intangible factors, and it just hasn't gotten better for this team at all. It just hasn't. I mean, the Celtics all year have been kind of analogous, I think, to the 2011 Red Sox. Now, the 2011 Red Sox were better because they were the best team in the American League through the first 5 months of the season, and they had the epic 7-win September. Was it 7-21, whatever it was? I mean, and so different in how it turned out, but even as the Red Sox were winning games in that 2011 season, it just never quite seemed right. There was a lot of bickering in the locker room. Stuff got leaked out of that clubhouse. You had them complaining about the Sunday night baseball schedule. You just had a lot of weird moments throughout that season. It did not seem like that team was together. And this Celtics squad, even when they've had their ups, right? So before the All-Star break, they go on a run. But that's the same time that Kyrie Irving is complaining about his contract situation, people asking him about his upcoming free agency, ask me July 1, I don't know anyone, bleep, and then you lose those two games before the break, you have Irving talking to Kevin Durant by the locker room on All-Star weekend, was he saying two max slots, who knows, and don't ask Kyrie about it, he'll be angry about it, and on the court, Kyrie has more than held up his end of the bargain, another 30-point effort for him last night, but it takes more than Kyrie Irving just scoring points. It takes effort on defensive end, it takes a good defensive plan, it takes a plan from the sidelines with Brad Stevens, it takes guys buying into their roles, and it takes guys taking this seriously. And judging by the comments after the Sixers loss and the comments for most of the year, this team just still seems to think that it can turn on the switch, and you can't. You cannot relax. I mean, last night, you're leading 112-94 with 8:20 remaining against a mediocre, at best, Charlotte Hornets team. They have Kemba Walker and nobody else. And what happens? Walker beats you single-handedly. You miss 17 of your last 19 shots. Just awful, awful, awful. So here we are, Sunday, March 24th, declaring the Celtics dead. Wow, what a proclamation on Sunday morning. That's the most powerful thing you hear. I guarantee you that. 617-779-7937 is your phone number. That again is 617-779-7937. Taking your Celtics reaction, do you agree with me? Was last night the final nail in the coffin, so to speak? Was it the final straw for you? Said all the cliches here. But really, I thought up till this past week, this most recent three-game losing streak, maybe come the playoffs, the Celtics turn this around, the talent finally comes through. But no, I don't think that's on the horizon. So taking your Celtics thoughts, also coming up, want to delve into the Chris Sale Red Sox deal now that it is official. In the past, I've railed against this. I've said, if you're the Red Sox, you don't want to risk signing up Sale. Don't do that. But now I see the terms of the deal, the very team-friendly terms of the deal. And you look at Chris Sale and just how he's really been you could say he's been the most dominant pitcher of his era. You really could. Totally changed. Huge win. Let's go Sox. We'll do that next with your calls. Sports Radio, WEEI.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Now back to Filani and Reamer on Boston Sports Station, WEEI.
I'm not the biggest fan of the business side of baseball. I missed the start yesterday and had to put him in an awkward situation, put Dana in an awkward situation, and some guy that didn't even know he was going to pitch had to pitch yesterday. I wanted that to be done with, and I want to get back to playing baseball and pitching, and that's where I've been my entire career. I got drafted, got to the big leagues, signed a contract, and I've only ever just played baseball. I've never really been in a situation that I've had to worry about these kind of things for a while, and if I did, it was a very short period of time, so I just wanted to get it done and just be able to go play baseball.
That was Chris Sale yesterday talking about his final deal with the Red Sox. Extension is finalized, 5 years, $145 million. We also found out yesterday his contract includes an opt-out after 3 years and a vesting option sixth year based upon starts that would be worth at least $20 million. ESPN was the first with that. Sale also has a full no-trade clause that gets enacted in the middle of the 2020 season. So he'll get paid $30 million over the first 3 years, of this deal. Then you have the opt-out, which happens in 2022, not coincidentally, right after the CBA expires. And then Sale is due a $27.5 million over the remaining two, in each of the remaining 2 years of that deal. I get accused on these airwaves a lot of not being flexible, of being stubborn, of not changing my opinion. I am here to tell you that I have changed my views, though, on the Chris Sale signing. And I'm sure it's been, the city's been buzzing about it. I've been railing against the Red Sox extending Chris Sale for months. I said he would be my last priority on your free agent list when you're talking about Mookie Betts and Bogarts and Martinez can opt out at the end of this year. Okay, I'd probably guess put him above Jackie Bradley, who's up in 2 years. But, you know, even Porcello, I'm on the record of saying I thought Porcello is a safer bet going forward than Sale. Obviously not nearly the same caliber of pitcher, but in terms of health, durability, could give you 30-plus starts a year, not break down in the second half. I thought Porcello a better bet going forward than Chris Sale, and I still think that in a lot of ways. But you look at the terms of this deal, 5 years, $145 million. It's a great deal for the Red Sox. It really is. I mean, Sale's going to make $30 million per for the first 3 years of this deal, so he's making a boatload of money. We're not crying poverty for Chris Sale. He's going to be very well paid. But this is not as much as he would have gotten on the open market. I mean, this deal is much closer to Patrick Corbin's six-year, $140 million deal than Max Scherzer's seven-year, $210 million deal that he signed a couple years ago with Washington. It's much closer to Corbin, the top free agent pitcher on this year's market, than what David Price got 3 years ago from the Red Sox, 7 years, $217 million. It's a lot closer to Corbin than Clayton Kershaw's $215 million. I mean, you guys get the gist. Sale will have the sixth highest pitcher AAV, annual average value, so salary per year, sixth highest. He's behind Greinke, who signed a $200-plus million deal with the Diamondbacks 3 years ago. He's behind Price, of course. He's behind Scherzer. He's behind both Kershaw extensions. So this is a guy who really has been the most dominant pitcher in baseball over the last 2 years. I mean, in 59 starts with the Red Sox, Sale is 29-12, 2.56 ERA, 13.2 strikeouts per nine innings. It's just unfathomable. He's been the starting pitcher in the All-Star game in each of the last two seasons. Throughout his career, nearly 1,500 career innings, Chris Sale is 103-62, 2.89 ERA. The second lowest ERA by any American League starting pitcher during the DH era, behind only Pedro Martinez, whose ERA was 2.52. Sales, I mentioned, right behind him at 2.89. So it's not hyperbolic to say that Chris Sale has been Pedro-esque ever since he entered the major leagues, and certainly has been Pedro-esque, 2.56 ERA in his first 2 years with the Red Sox. So Chris Sale is getting paid handsomely, but he's not breaking any records. As I mentioned, he will have the sixth highest yearly salary of any pitcher in history. So this is getting Chris Sale, on a relative deal for the Red Sox. So just looking at the terms of the deal, I think this is a win for the team. And we talk about pitchers breaking down as they enter their 30s, and that's true. There's so much risk for that, and there's so much precedent for that. Brandon Webb pitched four innings at 30 years old and then was done due to a blown out shoulder. That is relevant to Sale because, of course, he's had the shoulder issues. Johan Santana threw fewer than 500 innings once he reached his 30s. Felix Hernandez, his ERA this last year was 5.55. It's ballooned up from the low twos in 2014. Tim Lincecum looks like he's cooked. Clayton Kershaw looked mortal last year, fastball velocity dipping to the mid to upper 80s. Yu Darvish, six-year deal last winter. Cubs watched him blow out after eight starts this past summer. Chris Sale, the risk is there. He has a lanky, lean frame due to his shoulder. He only threw 17 innings from the end of July through the end of September last year. Come the playoffs, he was basically a five-inning pitcher. We all remember he struck out Manny Machado to end the World Series with that nasty breaking ball. Machado's on his knees. But come the playoffs, Sale's a five-inning pitcher at most. His two worst ERAs by month are August and September. He owns a losing record after September 1, 12-18, including the playoffs. So there's lots of precedent for pitchers blowing up once they reach 30 And once they get their big money deals, their nine-figure deals, Chris Sale certainly, due to his injury history, his history of faltering in the second half, his shoulder issues last year, his lanky frame, his violent delivery. Yeah, Sale is a high injury risk as well. But, I mean, Alex Speer has this in the Globe, and this also changed my mind. It may be a little overstated about how these elite pitchers break down in their 30s, because you look at guys like Maddux, Roy Halladay, Brett Saberhagen, all had better ERA plus scores in their ages 30 to 35 seasons than through their age 29 seasons. Verlander, Burt Blylevin, Mussina all posted ERAs that were at least 20% better than league average in their 30s. Even David Price, who conventional wisdom says, even including last year, has been a relative bust with the Red Sox given the money. His ERA plus was 126 with the Rays, Jays, and Tigers. It's been 119 with the Red Sox. Of course, 100 is league average. So David Price, not quite as good as he was earlier in his career, but still very damn good. With the Red Sox, and as I mentioned, Chris Sale has been the most dominant pitcher in baseball, definitely the last 2 years when he's been out there, and you could make the argument since he entered the league almost a decade ago at this point, he's been the most dominant pitcher with nearly 1,500 innings to his name. So, yes, there's risk with every long-term contract signing. There's risk with every pitcher you sign long-term, but Chris Sale has the track record. You're not going to find anybody better than he is. He wants to be here, which is huge. You heard the cut coming into the segment. Chris Sale saying he's never loved the business side of baseball. He wants to win. He likes the environment here. He likes spring training in Fort Myers. He can keep his home in Southwest Florida. So he loves so many aspects of being a member of the Red Sox. You give him a below market deal. I mean, if I told you last year at this time, hell, if I even told you last October that Chris Sale would sign a deal that's much closer to Patrick Corbin than Max Scherzer or Clayton Kershaw or David Price or Zach Greinke, you would have probably told me that I'm crazy. But that's what happened. And Corbin actually got 6 years guaranteed. Sale just got 5 years guaranteed. So this deal is a win for the Red Sox. They're locking down the most dominant pitcher in baseball. And, you know, I think 30 to 33, I still feel pretty good about Chris Sale. Last 2 years, yeah, maybe not so great. But A, there's an opt-out. And B, you know, David Price was a 7-year deal. You know, these contracts are usually 6, 7, 8 years. 5 years for Chris Sale. So if you have to carry 2 mediocre years at the end, 2 injury-riddled years at the end, that's for less money than the first 3 years, that's a risk worth taking. That's a risk worth taking. And even if Chris Sale gives you 170 innings in each of the next 3 seasons, he misses some starts due to injury, the Chris Sale at 170 innings, I mean, that is still damn valuable. That is still very, very valuable, even if he misses a few starts. That's still better than anything else you could get on the open market, and certainly better than anything else the Red Sox could develop, given their lackluster history of developing pitchers. So all of that considered, it is a risk, yes, and Sale embodies that risk. And if this deal was for $200 plus million in 7 or 8 years, I would not nearly be as optimistic about it. But this is a great deal for the Red Sox. They locked down the most dominant pitcher in baseball. It's hard to quibble with this one, as I say. But what do you say? 617-779-7937. Ross is in Worcester. What's up, Ross?
Hey, Alex. I'm a Team Ream guy, but you are so inconsistent with everything.
Well,
all off season,
I know.
Complain and whine and complain. They're not giving out big contracts. The big contracts are gone. Why aren't they giving out big contracts anymore? Like there's some big...
Oh, baseball, disparity. Yes.
Yeah, for baseball. Then you turn around and say, this Chris Sale deal is great because he would have got a huge contract if he went on the open market. So it's like, well, which one is it?
Well, hold on, Ross. I'll let you finish.
You compare it to Max Scherzer.
Yeah.
How old was Scherzer when he signed that deal?
About Sale's age, late 20s.
He was late. Well, Sale's going to be going into 31, right? When he's a free agent or late 30s?
He turned 30 this month.
Maybe not late 30s.
I think.
30, like turning 31. You know what I mean?
Right. He's 30 now.
Right. So go ahead. But no.
Well, no, I was going to say, Russ, but the thing about the free agency is that guys at the top of the market get paid. Bryce Harper got paid. Manny Machado get paid. My point has been the guys right below them. Kimbrel's still out there. Keuchel's still out there. It took till February for them to sign. So I'm talking about it as a whole. But Sale's at the top of the market. He still would have gotten paid, I think.
Well, I'm just saying, you know, your big point was Machado and Harper are 26, and they're not even getting paid. What is going on?
Well, because it took forever for them to get paid. I mean, they still,
okay.
Yeah.
Right. But then you just think, like, it's automatic that Chris Sale at 30 would have gotten this Max Scherzer type deal, which I just don't think those exist anymore.
So maybe the market for Sale would have been Corbin, and this deal is 1 year right. less than Corbin, 5 years
okay.
versus six.
So great. Yeah, so I just thought it was a little inconsistent, that's all.
Yeah, sure. Ross, hey, I mean, you're right. Maybe the market for pitchers entering their 30s has changed. That's a good point. You know, maybe the $217 million David Price contract was not a good barometer for Chris Sale because that has changed. And maybe in this market, yeah. But then you still got Chris Sale for market value. And you got him for 1 year less than Corbin. So I'm okay with that. In terms of baseball free agency as a whole, it was never about the guys at the very top of the market. We all knew that Machado would eventually get his $300 million, that Harper would get his $300 million. Mike Trout got $400-plus million this week with his 12-year extension. So we knew that the guys at the top of the market would get paid. It's the guys right below them. And my point still stands true because Craig Kimbrel is unemployed with opening day happening this week, by the way. Dallas Keuchel, former Cy Young winner, still unemployed with opening day happening this week. The free agency market was so slow to develop. Baseball is bereft of a hot stove season, which harms the game. So none of that stuff has changed. None of my opinion on that has changed. You still have vast, vast, vast quantities of teams to really sound like a geek. I could just say a lot of teams. I'm not sure why I said that. We're talking baseball contracts, so I got into like the mathematician mode. But we still have such large numbers of teams that are not spending anywhere close to the luxury tax threshold. You have far too many teams not competing in baseball. Deadspin had a piece yesterday on the Mariners slashing their payroll from last year to this year. So all that remains true. All that remains true. And I would also say, you look at all the big money extensions that have been signed. Trout, Paul Goldschmidt, Nolan Arenado, even Blake Snell for a really bad deal for him. 5 years, $50 million till his age 30 season. But still, you have all these long-term extensions getting signed in baseball. Why is that? Why are players not going to free agency? Because they see the landscape. And there's uncertainty with the CBA, and they see how slow the market has been to develop. So, again, Ross and Worcester, it's not just me who's been saying that this offseason. Look at what these star players are doing. I mean, Nolan Arenado and Paul Goldschmidt were due to be free agents at the end of this year. If you wind back the clock to even 3 years ago, two, 3 years ago, I don't think there's any way that Paul Goldschmidt signs an extension with the Cardinals right now, or that Nolan Arenado signs a long-term deal with the Rockies, with no opt-outs, by the way, either, with Goldschmidt. I mean, Goldschmidt is locked in. Arenado has an opt-out, but Harper, no opt-out. Mike Trout, no opt-out. So, you know, Blake Snell, no opt-out. So you have all of these long-term deals being signed, players opting not to hit the open market with no opt-outs in most of them. Yeah, I think that tells you how the landscape across baseball has changed. And I agree, there's risk with Chris Sale. As a rule, I don't love signing pitchers into their 30s, but you know, this is a fair deal for Sale, if not a good deal for the Red Sox.
I think if you look at this as a whole from both sides, I think anyways it's pretty fair for both sides.
Yeah, it is.
I think anyways. I mean, obviously that's why I signed it.
And I like him too. Don't you want a guy like that to be around here who wants to win, who wants to be in Boston? And the thing is, he has an opt-out after 3 years. So he's getting paid $30 million through the first 3 years of the deal. I am not all that concerned with Chris Sale and his age 30 to 33 seasons. I think he may spend some time in the DL this year, but that's okay. I mean, that's okay. I mean, if Chris Sale starts 27, 28 games for you versus 34, 35, and his 27-28 starts are as good as he's been in each of his first 2 years with the Red Sox, I'm okay with Chris Sale missing some time. I'm okay with paying Chris Sale $30 million to do that. I'm more than fine with that. So given the terms of the deal, I like the Sale extension. Dave Dombrowski said yesterday that he does not expect the Red Sox to sign any more extensions once the season begins. Quote, "We're focused on winning this year. I think the players are into that. Unless something unexpected happens, we're not going to do anything once the season starts." So, of course, he leaves the door open a little bit unless something unexpected happens. But that tells me that Mookie Betts, obviously, not getting locked up before opening day. Xander Bogaerts, not getting locked up before opening day. And now it turns to them for the Red Sox. You know, Bradfo has it too. Martinez can opt out at the end of the year. But remember, with the way that the free agency market has been so up and down and slow to develop, you know, look at JD Martinez, who last year didn't sign into the middle of February. in 2020 is due to make $23.75 million. So nearly $24 million. Is J.D. Martinez guaranteed to get himself more than $24 million on the open market next year? Maybe not. Now, after 2020, Brad Fohausen in his long Chris Sale column today, breaking down what this means for the Red Sox going forward and their other free agents. The final number for the final 2 years of Martinez's deal drops below $20 million per. So maybe he wants to get paid more on the back end and opts out. But my point is, you have Sale locked up now, 5 years. Now we turn our attention to Betts and Bogarts. If I'm Dombrowski and the Red Sox, we know about Mookie Betts. I'm not giving Mookie Betts an extension this year or even next year before the season starts, because you're not going to get him any sort of discount. If he wants Mike Trout money, $400+ million, let him play out these 2 years, see what happens. And the Red Sox have more money than pretty much any other team in baseball outside of the Yankees and maybe the Dodgers. If they want Mookie Betts, they'll be able to get Mookie Betts. I do not believe the Red Sox will be outbid for any player who they sincerely want to keep on the open market. So that's why, if I'm the Red Sox, if I'm not getting Mookie Betts at a discount, then I don't see much of a point in signing him right now to a long-term extension when you still have him under contract for 2 years. He's getting paid well in arbitration. He says he wants to be treated fairly. I mean, if you want to rail against the Red Sox with Betts, the issue is what they did to him last year. I mean, Mookie confirmed this week the Red Sox offered him an 8-year, $200 million extension last year, which is, talk about market value, that is at the least $150 million below market value for Mookie Betts, and probably $200 plus below market value for Mookie Betts. I understand he had a down 2017, so smart for the Red Sox to swoop in, try to sign Betts when his value is not at an apex, but still, they should have forecasted the $200 million for 8 years for Mookie Betts, even coming off a relatively down 2017 form. I mean, he finished second MVP voting in 2016, still in his mid-20s. I mean, just the Red Sox lowballed Mookie Betts, and his comments this week, I want to be treated fairly, want to be paid my worth, those are not so subtle jabs at the Red Sox, I think. So I'm not worried about Mookie Betts until his contract expires in 2021. I'm really not, because, again, if the Red Sox want to keep a player on the open market, I don't believe they'll be outbid. And if you're not going to get Mookie on a discount, then what's the point in signing him early? Let's play it out, see what happens. And as far as Bogarts is concerned, you know, same thing. I mean, if Xander Bogarts is not going to take a discount, and I'm sure the Red Sox and Bogarts have talked, and I'm sure they've certainly talked to Scott Boras, his agent, then play him out, play out the year, see what happens for Bogarts in 2019, see if he can have another strong second half like he had last year. Then you go to the open market, and if you're the Red Sox, it's time to start outbidding the competition for your own players, because up to the Chris Sale extension, the largest extension this ownership group has ever given one of its own players was Dustin Pedroia, the $110 million deal he signed years ago. But if you look through the history of this Red Sox ownership group, from Pedro to, you know, obviously Lester to Papelbon, they do not sign their own guys. They sign other players. They'll spend $217 million on David Price. They'll spend $142 million on Carl Crawford. They'll sign Adrian Gonzalez to a mammoth contract extension. They'll pay Ruzny Castillo out of Cuba $86 million, basically sight unseen. So they have no problem throwing around, you know, Rick Porcello obviously got a huge extension once he came here. So they have no problem. Ellsbury they let go. So they have no problem paying other teams as guys, but they don't pony up their own star guys. And all those were the right moves, right? Ellsbury, obviously the right move to make. Papelbon, the right move to make. Pedro, even, you want to go back that far, right move to make. Lester's the one mistake, and I don't think they wanted to repeat that with Chris Sale, which is why they locked him up. But the Red Sox have more money than God. They can outbid any team on the open market that they want to outbid. So I wouldn't fret it that Bogarts is probably going to hit the open market this winter, and Mookie Betts 2 years from now seems poised, seems ready to hit the open market, because the Red Sox can outbid other teams for their guys. They can. If you're not going to get these guys to sign a team-friendly deal now, why not play out the year? But again, to circle back to Chris Sale, I think they got him to sign a relatively team-friendly deal. He does not seem like a guy who was intent on hitting up the open market. You just heard him heading into the segment. He does not like the business side of baseball, and now the Red Sox have arguably the most dominant pitcher in the game locked up for 5 years with an opt-out after 3 years. I think it is a good deal for both sides. I really do. So my thinking on this has changed, and there is still an injury risk, but Sale for the next 3 years till the opt-out, I'm not too worried. In worst case, you carry on 2 years at the back end. That's better than 3 or 4 years at the back end, which is what you see with Price and a lot of these other long-term extensions that pitchers receive. 617-779-7937 is your phone number. That, again, is 617-779-7937. Celtics sale on the table. Also, though, coming up next, Friday on Mutton Callahan, me, Mutton Wiggy, we're going back and forth about this new Dorchester TD Garden ad. You know, when you're downtown, but your card is in Dorchester. Ooh, scary Dorchester. I rattled off some of the reasons why. I don't think that ad was necessarily racist, but I think that it had some overtures, and Wiggy and I on the same page, there. But I cited, I mentioned another town, another low-income area, and made a huge mistake. A huge mistake that I've been killed all weekend on Twitter. It's not quite, there's no tea in Mattapan, but it's close to that kind of idiocy. So I do want to correct the record. We'll do that next as well with your calls. It's Reamer on a Sunday morning, Sports Radio, WEEI.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Now back to Filani and Reamer on Boston Sports Station, WEEI.
Feels like he's like at that third strike. And he, I go, so let's do this. He goes, well, Joey doesn't really trust me.
Oh, baby, you said that on the air or off the air?
Oh, off the air, off the air.
Because that's true. You're Joey's new favorite, and Reamer is not Joey's favorite. Put it that way.
Yeah, well, he said Joey didn't trust him. I said, well, you know, just if this is interesting, let's talk about it. And then he's like, I don't know if I can really go down that road. So there might be some things that if we had a show, he wouldn't want to touch on.
Not many people say that about Reamer, though. That is breaking news that he walks on eggshells.
Okay, I'm very offended that Wiggy would take an off-air conversation and put it on the air. I mean, I would never do that to anybody. So I am totally offended that Jermaine Wiggins would do that kind of thing to me. But we played that sound coming in because it's like Ebony and Ivory. I'm telling you, it's the Odd Couple. The reviews are good against what I want. You know, Wiggy and I are saying we don't want a nickname. Because if we have a nickname, that means it becomes a show. It becomes a regular thing. So we don't want a nickname, but that may be coming. Who knows? But I was on with him and Mutt Friday morning. We were talking about this TD Bank advertisement that was in downtown Boston this week and had to be taken down after a vigilant Twitter user, Riley-AbolishICE-Hey, number one in your Twitter feed, number one in your hearts, called the ad racist. It says, when you are downtown, but your card is in Dorchester. Ooh, your debit card in scary Dorchester. TD Bank is there for you for stolen or lost debit cards. So some folks, including this Riley-AbolishICE-Hey and others in the Dorchester community, though worth noting, the most offended participant, this Riley-Hey, not from Dorchester, lives in Somerville. But regardless, people took the ad the wrong way. Me and Wiggy were on the same side of that. Didn't think it was an overtly racist ad, but, and, you know, not their intention. But, you know, your card's in downtown, when you're in downtown, but your card's in Dorchester, like, ooh, scary Dorchester. You know, if the sign said, when you're downtown, but your card is in Brighton, or when you're downtown, but your card is in Dedham, if you even want to put another D in there for the alliteration, it doesn't quite have the same ring as, ooh, Dorchester. And my whole point was that growing up in my leafy suburb of Natick, our Pop Warner Football League, Dorchester used to be in it, and my brother used to play Pop Warner football, and we used to go to Dorchester for a road game like once a year, and all the parents were very nice people. Would say things like, oh, we have Dorchester this week. Oh, be careful. I mean, maybe make sure to lock your cars. And I said, I think that there was subliminally a racial component to that. And I mentioned, you know, if you go to a whiter, lower income area, like let's say Brockton, I don't know if parents would have that same reaction. Of course, then I get eviscerated on Twitter all weekend long because Brockton, of course, is 43% black and 42.8% white. So I am a real moron. Before I talk about any more towns on the air, I will make sure to look up the racial makeup. So I apologize to any who I confused, any who I outraged. Wrong. No tea in Mattapan, and Brockton, 90% white, at least according to yours truly. No. So there you go. Just wanted to clear that up from Friday's Mutton Callahan, because I'm always right. You know, I'm a journalist. First and foremost, I paid about $250,000 for my journalism degree from Boston University. And that's on the low end. I mean, I saw the other day, BU tuition now, $72,000 a year in total, tuition plus room and board to attend Boston University. So I got on the cheap end. I was fortunate. It only cost me about $250,000 for my degree. So I want to be accurate. So I want to clear that up so you can stop tweeting at me, all you parody accounts. I'm owning it. I'm owning that mistake. But my point is still proven. Insert another town. I think the racial component is a reason why some of the parents go, oh, you're going to Dorchester, make sure to lock your doors. Or I recently moved to the Roxbury South End line, right there on the line. And the first reaction from a lot of people is, oh, you're in Roxbury, is it safe there? Like, well, if, you know, I don't, yeah, it's fine. It's fine. So I think that I don't think we can ignore these things. That's the larger point, but I want to clear up that misconception as well. So there you go. The record is corrected. 617-779-7937. The opening for the show today is said Villani and Reamer. It's just been yours truly, but Chris Villani is in the house. He's in the pediatrician waiting area eating his breakfast. He will join us next to continue to sift through the sale extension. Does he agree with me? Are the Celtics done? Put a fork in him. He's shaking his head. And also, Villani is a legal expert. He writes for Law 360. Law firms pay tens of thousands of dollars a year for Villani's legal expertise. We're going to dive into the Kraft situation next. Robert Kraft did speak. He issued an apology yesterday, first time since the charges were announced last month, but he apologized without specifying what exactly he was apologizing for in the owners' meetings in Phoenix, due to begin today as well. So Reamer and Villani, 10 o'clock hour, starts next. Sports Radio, WEI.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.